Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this week, we have Bob Props Jr. We're going to talk fall walleye fishing out on some western reservoirs. Now, the Props family name's got a lot of history in the walleye fishing world. We're going to talk a little bit about that, a little bit about Bob Props Sr., but I tell you what, there's just a lot of fun stories and a lot to learn in this week's conversation on the JMO Podcast with Bob Props Jr. Let's get into this interview. But first, wherever you're getting the podcast, whether you're following along on YouTube, Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcast, make sure to like and subscribe, share with all your fishing friends. We appreciate all the support, and there's comment sections everywhere, so make sure that you're dropping a line for a recommended topic or a future guest on an upcoming show. We appreciate all that. And head over if you want to check out some of our JMO podcast merch on the Jason Mitchell Outdoors website. Click the apparel tab. You can see everything we got there. We appreciate the support. Now let's get into this interview with Bob Props Jr. talking fall walleyes. Kind of just start at the beginning and hit some of the high points. You know, we'll probably try to spend most of our time talking fishing and kind of your part of the world and what's good and trendy down there. But to get everybody up to speed on your career and just kind of, kind of the pedigree of your family.
Well, I've basically been fishing professional walleye tournaments and guiding since the age of 14. So we're going on 40 years. I was lucky enough to be the son of the legend Bob Props Sr., Hall of Famer, which he pretty much pioneered a lot of the things we use today and helped teach a lot of people how to fish. And so it was, at a young age, it was pretty intimidating having the legend as your father. And he sticks me in smaller tournaments at a young age. And started doing well, actually, instantly. And I was fortunate enough that I picked up a lot of his sponsors. And so throughout my career, I was kind of fortunate. I could travel all over the country and fish everywhere and then go back to school. And he basically taught me everything I know. And he was just a unique guy that he didn't follow the book. There was no book. There was walleyes or walleyes. They're going to be where they want. They're going to eat when they want. And he was just kind of off the charts. And he was so much more advanced than the anglers at that time. It was just crazy. And so I was very lucky to be able to, I'd be in grade school, get out of school. My mom would take me down to the boat ramp. He'd pick me up. He was running two groups a day at Lake McConaughey. Well, I'd get on the boat. Well, instead of just sit on the boat with the clients, he'd actually make me run the boat. And so he taught me everything there was, which I'm really grateful for. And throughout my career, it was just amazing to run around fishing the first ever Timmy Mannion circuit, for instance. Then went on to fish MWCs with my partner, Chad Hall. We were the youngest team to compete. And then we moved into PWTs. Won the Rookie of the Year title in like 1991 and continued just to fish all the circuits and all the small tournaments and was lucky to win quite a few. I got to win some with my dad, then went on to the bigger ones and got to win a few of those. And just always been a true passion of mine, and it's been quite the ride. And it's amazing. Everywhere I go in the country, everybody knows my father. And it's the stories and the questions you get asked. It's just, it's unbelievable. And it was awesome growing up. We had my dad, Mike McClellan, Randy Amnerud, Gary Roach. I mean, the best of the best. And I was fortunate to be young and get to witness all that, which was just amazing. And between tournaments and guiding all the time. I guide in Nebraska and Lake McConaughey. I guide in Pierce, South Dakota, Mobridge, South Dakota, Chamberlain, South Dakota, Platte, South Dakota. So I'm kind of fortunate. I can bounce around, hit some new bodies of water at different times of the year. And it's been a lot of fun.
And to go back, you know, and talking about that mentality of, you know, just having that open mind, not having to play by the book, you know, and just, you know, probably just knowing that if everybody's going to use the same template to catch fish and you're in a competition setting to win consistently, you know, got to think outside the box. Where do you think that came from? I mean, did your grandpa fish? Where did this all start? You know, or you know, who lit the torch?
You know, that this is very unique. My grandfather was a businessman. He did not fish much, but he paid people to take my dad at a young age fishing all over. And so my dad got to go fish in Minnesota, everywhere. And dad just, I don't know, it lit a fire. And he instantly, from an early age, just turned into a fishing guide and then a tournament fisherman. And yeah, my grandfather did not fish at all.
That's interesting. That's super interesting, but a great story. I mean, nonetheless, everybody's story is different, you know, even right down to, you know, just your average guy. You know, it's just fun to, it's fun to look back on those childhood stories and see that. But, you know, it's from the sounds of it, you know, your dad lit this torch and gave you an opportunity to pass it along, and now you carry it proudly. And I love that. And that's kind of where I want to get to now and talk to kind of what's the capacity that you live in today. You know, you I guess you kind of already mentioned it, that you guide in the different locations. Where do you spend most of your time this time of year?
This time of the year, I'm actually in Pierre, South Dakota, fishing Lake Oahe and Lake Sharp right now. And then later in the fall, I'll be up to Mobridge, South Dakota.
Gotcha. And you're spending most of your time guiding? I mean, what does your season look like? I mean, what do you forecast? And, you know, one thing that I've asked everybody that is fishing these Missouri River systems consistently is, you know, what are some of the trendy conversations that you've been having this year with this low water? I mean, what do you think are kind of the big topics of conversation that we should be talking about, or maybe that, you know, some of the fun conversations that you've already been involved in?
You know, I guess, yes, we have low water everywhere. To be real honest, to start the season at McConaughey in western Nebraska, the lake is dropping at a tremendously fast rate. Oahe's the same way. I mean, all these lakes, boy, we definitely have low water issues. And it seems like, to be real honest, it's kind of, I think it's affected the fishing. We've had tremendously hot days for a lot. And right now on Oahe is fishing very tough and very deep. If you want to catch fish, you're going to have to move out super deep and fish some jigging wraps and even bouncers or however you like to fish. But I tend to, this time of the year, I'm fortunate. When those fish drop off deep, I don't really want to target those fish because I don't want to really kill any small fish. And so I'm lucky on Lake Sharp, right in town of Pierre, within the first 10-mile stretch, here it is August, 100 degrees. We're catching walleyes in 4 to 8 foot of water, and we're catching a lot of fish. No, they're not big fish, but they're 15 to 21-inch fish. So I'll continue to stay on Lake Sharp now until things cool down. We get some fish moving back up shallow on Oahe. Then I'll venture back up on Oahe. So I'm kind of in a unique situation because I got the best of both worlds. I got the big lake, and then I got the river, which I call Sharp.
Right on. Well, so break that down for me a little bit from your perspective and experience. What are the major differences with Oahe and Sharp?
You know, I guess, well, Sharp, for instance, the first 10 miles of Sharp, you basically, you have a couple areas where you got 25 foot of water. Not very much. Usually it's 15 foot or less. So you have no deep water. Yes, you, as you get down on Sharp, if you get down 20, 30 miles, you'll find deeper water, which is nice, where we don't have to fish that deep water right now because these fish are up on these sand flats and in these sand little cuts. And I tell you what, it is so fun to just drop a bouncer down when you're guiding. It makes it easy. You're in 5, 6, 7, 8 foot of water. You're never getting snagged. You're catching fish. Where Oahe, you know, is a lake that's 220 miles long, just massive, deep. And those fish, every year it happens. Typically, it's usually a week before the Governor's Cup, which is basically mid-July. You'll have a great shallow bite going in less than 10 foot. And once that heat gets to be too much, boom, those fish just completely dive off the edge and they get down there deep. And it makes it tougher to catch them. And guys do really good that go target those fish. But as for a guide, I'd rather take them to a place where it's easier fishing, where you're going to catch a lot of fish. And you're not spending as much time driving around the lake really looking for them. Or on the river, you just go with the current. When you get a triple, go a little ways further. If you don't get bit again, turn around, you go back up, come right back to that icon, get as many as you can. And you just keep hitting certain locations, and it just makes it really enjoyable. And I mean, it's just a quality fishery. Sharp is not known for big fish like Lake Oahe is, but yes, we will catch those big fish in February, March, April. We'll catch some big fish down there. But typically, you're looking at 15 to 20-inch fish, but you're getting numbers.
And I'm sure your clients are super, super happy with all that, especially like you say, with the pretty easy fishing, we'll call it, or just easy strategy or tactics that aren't real messy. It's not real, you know, you just spend time with lines in the water. Talk a little bit about that. You know, you had this tournament career and you were kind of baptized into that, but, you know, as well as the guiding, has it been kind of easy to contrast the two mentalities, we'll call them, of fishing for you? I mean, I have a huge respect for people that have been able to make success in their career balancing, you know, what it takes to be an aggressive tournament fisherman as well as, you know, the soft hands of a guide day in and day out. So for you, I mean, talk about that a little bit, just from your career and just your experiences and your learning curves.
You know, it's funny. Fishing tournaments is so much different than guiding. I mean, okay, yes, big money tournaments, there's more pressure on you. But it's weird. Guiding is a totally different mentality. And years ago when I was young, yes, I had that fire to be, you know, a professional fisherman, which it takes a lot of drive, a lot of time, and you've got to put your work in. And I mean, it's a tough deal. And the thing I like about guiding is you're meeting people that you're going to actually get to take fishing. And I've had clients for 30 years plus now. So they get to be best friends and they're able to come up, enjoy fishing with you. There's really no pressure. But at the same time, when you're guiding, you're after a lot of action. You want action. Where tournament fishing is different. You might be targeting big fish and figuring out what to do and then try to find small fish spots, you know, where you catch some numbers. Where, yeah, that burning desire is being a tournament fisherman, I pretty much lost that like 7 years ago. I just don't have that drive. But I tell you what, it was fun when I did it. And now it's more relaxing to just jump in the boat with your friends and new people that you hook up with and take them out fishing, and especially kids, and get them to catch some fish. And it's just amazing. The memories from guiding, the memories from tournaments, I mean, I've just been truly blessed.
Yeah, and the place in the world where you live, you know, the fishing is great, but it's also very scenic. You know, you've just got this beautiful open plains country. There's whitetails and mule deer running around. I mean, for the average outdoors person that maybe travels from other parts of the Midwest to from the East, you know, it's just the best vacation they would take all year probably. So, I mean, you talk about, you know, just a great opportunity to live where you live. Yeah. I guess to get back on track with, maybe we'll pick something. Do you feel like you have sort of a specialty when you're in South Dakota? Or we can talk McConaughey as well. Like, is there kind of like a fun, say, this time of year as we get kind of towards the end of summer? And even if you talk early fall, you know, you're talking about moving up in that Lake Oahe system when we get more so into the fall, quote unquote, time of year. I mean, does your mouth water when you just think about this time of year for any one particular reason?
You know, I do enjoy the fall and into the winter. I'm fortunate Lake Sharp doesn't freeze up the first 10 miles. I can literally boat fish all winter long in Lake Sharp, and pitching jigs is definitely my passion. I love it. And it's funny, as things cool down, it's funny, Oahe will have fish that stay deep, but there'll be a lot of fish that move up super shallow, which I really like to target those fish. I just enjoy casting jigs and minnows, jigs and plastic. And the deep bite, yes, is fun, but I'd rather go target those shallow fish. There's something about shallow water fish that just, I mean, it just, I love it. And it's just like right now on this river. I mean, you're in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 foot and you're catching these fish. And we're right now, we're just guiding. So we're using bouncers right now. And it is fun. Now here, as things cool down, we'll switch over and we'll get into a real good jig bite. And we'll be spot locking with the clients and they can pitch off to the side of the boat and have the current sweep it down and they'll catch a lot of fish. But yes, jig fishing in the, you know, once things cool down, are definitely, that's what I want to do. I love it, and it was all winter long, and in the spring, bottom bouncer fishing, it's a very easy way to guide and teach people how to catch fish. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out, and it works very well. But I'm kind of the point now, I'm really wanting to get those jigs back out.
The JMO Podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul, running on the power of promises kept. To maybe break down that pattern a little bit, when you get into fall end of summer, that fall time frame, and those Oahe fish are moving up shallow, are those kind of predictable spots for you? Predictable as in, can you go back on last year's memories or waypoints and find fish in the exact same spots? Or is there kind of a recipe for success that you just got to find year in and year out to get on those fish? How does that pattern, what would you say the pattern really ends up being?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. It's pretty over the years. I've fished so much in different locations. Okay, so fall, I'm pretty much concentrating, let's say, in Mobridge, in the Morro, in the Grand, major spawning areas. Down by Pier, I'm in the Cheyenne River, which is major spawning areas. And typically what I'm looking for in the fall for those shallow fish, I'm going backs in the bays, backs in the cups. I mean, and basically, I'm just pitching. I mean, pitch, pitch, pitch. I'm not driving around looking for those fish. It's pretty funny. Over the years, boy, there's stretches that seem to hold up and work. And then there's stretches that don't. But it's just kind of predictable. And it's funny, though. You'll see other boats, they have their favorite stretches. I mean, it's all where you have the confidence. You know you've caught them before in the past. And it's funny, people will do different things and they have great success. And with fishing, you're never gonna always catch them. I mean, there's days you could throw everything at them and those fish are not gonna bite. And I guess that's what keeps it really interesting. I mean, yes, it's great when you got there and just pound on fish, but all of a sudden you hit a 2-3-4 day stretch where you can't even buy a fish, and that kind of lights a fire again under you.
Yeah.
Walleyes are truly amazing. I mean, we think we got them totally figured out. Well, I tell you what, they've got the advantage most of the time.
For you, what kind of weather changes in your mind start to affect the fish to come moving shallow, and then on those fall days, what are the weather patterns that are maybe different than the season we just left, that summer, just to kind of contrast and maybe give the weather its due in this conversation?
It's kind of funny. It seems like it just takes, and you never know when it's going to happen, but you need the temperatures in the nights to start falling down a little bit, getting cooler and cooler. And then it seems like those fish start to make a little transition, and you have a few fish starting to move up shallow, and naturally a lot's going to stay deep and some are going to go in between. But once you can get, it seems like it takes about a 10-day stretch, in my opinion, of cooler weather to get those fish to start changing patterns and moving. And then all of a sudden, when that happens, I mean, then it's just cooler mornings. And you just know, come October, it's like, it just seems like the bite gets good about every lake I go to in October.
Right on. And for you, like, along those same lines, you look back to like spring. Spring is one of those transitional periods where we have this weather, and we usually wait in this, in the spring, the afternoons are always good because we're looking for that water that is slowly, the water temps that are slowly climbing. And mm-hmm. in the afternoon, the fish are a little more active because the water is, it's a little bit warmer that time of year. In the fall, are those morning bites still where it's at when that water is kind of cool, just because the time of year those fish are really reacting to the cooling temperatures? Or how do those bite windows shape up for you in the fall versus other times of year?
It's really funny. Typically in the fall, okay, we do some pheasant guiding too. So we're going to take the pheasant hunters at about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock during the day. So I'll take clients out early in the morning. Normally, a lot of times in the fall, I'm able to get those fish to bite instantly right away in the morning. They're just seems like they're on. Yes, there's days where they're not. And then you hear guys that fish later as the temperatures got a little better, they did better. But it seems like early in the mornings or late in the day works really good for me.
Right on, right on. I like that. Just to kind of lay out some general good information, because, there's a lot of we'll call it new or just sort of some rejuvenated participation in the fishing world nowadays, especially across the Midwest. And, whether somebody hasn't been to Oahe in 25 years or maybe they've never been at all, just that those good ideas, those good, pass along kind of tips are just can really, really help a lot of people out. I mean, any other real trendy topics? Yeah, I got a couple more questions here, but, for what we've talked about so far, any other real good trendy topics or things that you just know you want to hit when we're talking that early fall shallow jig bite? I mean, when it transitions, are you going to fish bottom bouncers right up until you head up to Oahe and start pitching jigs, or how does that day one start for you when you go up there? What are your big considerations? What are your big evaluations on the water to figure out what's going to happen?
Well, basically, yeah, I'll be using bouncers, and then all of a sudden I'll get to a period where I'll have about 5 days off from guiding, and then that's when I go experiment to see if I can start getting those fish up shallow with jig. But yeah, it just seems like, a rule of thumb is, it's kind of weird. And it seems like everywhere I've been in the country, spring, okay, naturally a jig bite and crankbaits, shallow water. But at the same time, you got those fish. It seems like 30 foot is a super good depth for right after the spawn or before the spawn. It seems like those fish start recovering, a lot drop off deeper. lay out there. You can still catch them up shallow. And it's kind of the same way, you know, in the fall, it's you've got those fish, all of a sudden they'll be in that super deep water, things start cooling down, and boom, a lot of fish move up shallow. But you won't see many people on Oahu fishing those shallow fish, because I think they're so accustomed to fishing deeper, they go around, use their electronics, and you can see those fish. They're more comfortable doing that. I enjoy the going backs in the cups. And basically, I'm not looking for anything really, I mean, specific. It's just stretches. You drop the bomb out down and you start pitching. You don't get bit, you might move. Then all of a sudden keep pitching and you'll find the little honey holes or little stretches, I should say. And at the same time, when we're pitching the jigs, even when they move shallow, I'll always have a bottom bouncer and just a minnow for a dead rod just sitting over the side. And that catches fish too. But like I said, I've used bottom bouncers all summer long. I'm more ready to get in the jig bite. And another topic, you know, are, you know, the jigging wraps and slabbing. That's fun in the fall. I mean, you catch a lot of big fish doing it. I don't spend that much time doing it. And I'm just more of a shallow water guy.
Right on, right on. And for you, are you marking a lot of bait in these situations? I mean, what are some of the subtle little details of things that you're kind of paying attention to at that time, you know, besides just pitching the shoreline?
Well, basically, kind of looking for a little wind blowing in to areas, and not necessarily do you need it all the time, but just a nice breeze blowing in might create a little mud line. And yes, there will be at times you can see some bait. But it's funny, these fish will literally be in the backs of these cups, of the, as far back in these bays as you can go, where you run out of water. And I mean, it's been like this for years, and very few people target those fish. I was just lucky enough that my dad taught me that and showed me that years ago. And so basically, I can have a lot of spots to myself when I'm guiding or fishing for fun that nobody even messes with. And it just makes it nice.
Yeah, yeah. But to be fair, you've already mentioned it. I'll mention it again. You know, these aren't the only fish to catch, and that's kind of the beauty of those reservoirs. We're just talking about this shallow bite that you like. But yeah, those anybody that's out on a main point that's trolling wherever and they catch a limit of fish that they like too, it's kind of the land of opportunity down there.
It is. It's so fun because, yes, you can do anything you want. I mean, the fall is just a fun time because you've got the shallow water bite, you got the deep water bite, you got the troll bite, you got a jigging wrap bite. I mean, you can do pretty much anything you want and catch fish. And it just, yeah, it's just nice. You're not out there baking in 100 degrees and the quality of fish are outstanding. You do catch quite a few big fish in the fall. And typically, I mean, Oahu is known for great numbers of smaller fish. You've got a lot of 15, 16, 17, 18 inches, which I prefer keeping for eating. And the bigger ones, basically, we try to throw as many of the big ones back unless somebody does catch a true wall hanger that they want.
Sure. And I mean, you know, for you, here we are, we're talking, you've been in the industry for so long, you know, in comparison to so many others, and you've seen a lot of things come and go. You've seen a lot of things come to stay in the industry. What have been some of the most fun fishing opportunities, or whether it's a new strategy or a new technique that you've learned, or maybe an old technique that you use in a new way? What have been some of the real fun things that you've really incorporated into your arsenal in the last 10 years?
Oh boy, let's see. Well, to be real honest, we call it slabbing, because we used the original 40 years ago, we were using slab spoons. They were just a round slab spoon, you know, thin, heavy, and we jerk those slabs around. And this is in Western Nebraska and all the other lakes, and we catch a bunch of big fish. And now it's kind of weird seeing, okay, now the shiver minnows and all the other stuff, that trend is coming back. And it's like a lot of people kind of think that's a new deal. Well, years ago, there's a lot of people that did it on various bodies of water. And I mean, it was nothing fancy. It was a hunk of lead with some paint on it. And so now it's pretty fun though. I do like to use shiver minnows and stuff. And I don't go out and buy every color there is. I'm not that type of guy. I'm not big on colors. I think colors, you know, sell. I pretty much use whatever's in front of me. And my dad showed me that. And so that's how I do it. And it's kind of funny. I fish with buddies and they're switching nonstop. And I'll just use the same old thing over and over and over. And yeah, I mean, it seems to work. Yeah, there's times it don't work. But I'm pretty simple. I keep things as simple as possible, which I think in walleye fishing, especially with the new guys coming up, keep it simple. Learn a technique, then work on something else. You've got to be able to do it all, especially if you're going to go fish the professional trail. You've got to know how to troll crankbaits. You better know how to shiver minnow. You better know how to live bait fish. You better know how to throw jigs. I mean, it just takes time and a lot of hours. And yeah, use your electronics. Get comfortable with whatever electronics you prefer. And boat control, to me, when you're live bait fishing, is probably the most critical thing there is. So, I mean, once people get to do that, it's like they're going to get the hang of it. And it's really not that hard. It just takes time.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of experience, right?
Yep, you got to go do it. I mean, you can't sit on the couch, and you got to get out there. And even the times you go when it's tough, but you're still learning.
Yeah.
And the days they bite, that's awesome too. But yeah, just spending more time on the water is the biggest key.
Did you keep track at all of the two NWT tournaments that were in South Dakota this year?
Yes, I did actually. I was in Nebraska during both of them, and it pretty much went as expected for what I thought. I mean, the last one at Mobridge, I knew there'd be a few good weights. I knew there'd be a lot of small weights. And Chamberlain's always, you know, you got to hope to catch a big fish, and you're going to catch a lot of fish down there. It's a fun place to go. But yeah, it pretty much went as I thought for both tournaments. And I mean, sometimes, yes, there could be better times where maybe there's better catches. But the problem is, when you set up a tournament, you got a time frame, you got to go with it, you know. And
yep.
And so, no, it the last one totally went. I mean, it was totally pretty much predictable. I mean, you knew some guys were going to bag 15 to 20 pounds, and you knew a lot of guys would struggle and get, you know, 6, 7, 8 pounds.
Yep. And, you know, one thing for me, you know, I'm pretty I see the industry pretty new in my world. Maybe the last 5, 6 years, I've been paying attention real hard to a lot of this stuff. And so for me, one thing I think that's interesting, and for people that are, you know, paying attention to these things for the first time, or, you know, being exposed to this era of social media and YouTube and all this stuff where it's in front of us now, and realizing that even at these high level walleye tournaments on these big bodies of water, you know, in the top 5, 6, 10 places, you know, with all these weights, there can be two or three or four wildly different programs being targeted on these bodies of water. I imagine that's nothing new for you, but maybe talk about that, you know, just kind of the learning curve in walleye fishing over the years. I mean, and even to kind of include what you're talking, you know, the slabbing, you know, things that you, do you think that that was just ahead of its time?
You know, that's a funny deal. In 2006 and 2007, I won back-to-back PWT tournaments, professional walleye trail tournaments out of Chamberlain. And I was pitching jigs in 2 foot of water. I mean, a foot of water at times. And guys are out trolling crankbaits in 30-foot, 35-foot, 25-foot, catching them. Now, some guys even were out using shiver minnows out deeper too, catching them. And yeah, it's just weird. It's, I don't know, looking back over the years, you always had a set of anglers that, okay, one guy was known as a jig guy. One guy was pretty good all around. One guy was truly a trolling guy. And that's, they chose what they liked to do and they perfected it and they're comfortable with that. And it's like myself, I was never big into, there was a lot of tournaments I had to do it and I did have good success at it. But like pulling a lead core, for instance, for me, I did it if I had to in a major tournament, if I knew that's what it was going to take. But I was kind of, I'd always looked for what I preferred and felt more comfortable doing. And you see that a lot today. You see guys, and it's pretty routine. I can look at the field and say, okay, this guy, he's going to be tough here. This guy's going to be tough. And, I mean, it's pretty cool to see everybody has their niche. And it's just amazing how on any given body of water, at any time, fish can be in a foot of water to 100 foot of water. And all it takes is the right guys. They're going to go figure out their pattern and their favorite techniques, and they put it together, and they end up doing well, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I just think that that's so, there's so much learning now to be had kind of as a result of that, where you do have, you know, all these different patterns being identified and targeted in these tournaments. And, you know, I say this a lot on this show to our guests, that I have zero tournament fishing aspirations, but I'm kind of have this light obsession with it because I just learned so much from the anglers and their post-tournament interviews and everything that goes on. We try to have as many tournament anglers on this show as we can because, you know, quite frankly, talking about tournament fishing or just the things, the learning curve that goes into high-level tournament fishing is just, you know, it just exposes all these things and the learning curves just it explodes. But I get a kick out of this too, and this is kind of a personal thing, but if you're enjoying them, those shallow bites, have you ever tried, you know, ended up looking back at a tournament and took a big L, or where you kind of beat a dead horse and you just thought, you know what, I want to catch them shallow so bad that I'll die on this hill? Or have you always been kind of a chameleon and had the ability to make those adjustments when, you know, whenever you needed to?
You know, it's funny. I tell you what, I've had some where I just took a beating and I'm going to catch them this way. And I mean, once in a while it works out for you, but it seems like you really need to adapt and be on the fly a lot. And because otherwise, I mean, you sit too long and it's not working. I mean, so for me, I do pretty much fish fast. Back in the tournament days, I'd fish fast. I mean, in meaning fishing fast, cover a lot of water, whether it's pitching jigs, I'd cover areas as quick as possible, maybe burn bouncers and spinners, throw them, pull crankbaits, throw crankbaits. But I'd try to cover as much water as I could, find different patterns. And it's funny though, the spring of the year, I'm stubborn enough, though, I'm fishing jigs. I do know that my buddies are out there pulling lead core, and they're catching some good fish, but I'm kind of stubborn enough that I actually do prefer that. So I'll stick with that program, and I'm not going to go jump on their stretches and do that. But you do have to adapt, and it seems like you've got to cover a lot of water. There's times where you stop on the spot, you make 10 casts, you don't get bit, you're moving, you're gone. Go a little ways, get another point or cup, you just find favorite stretches and you keep going, and hopefully you run into that bite. And there's times where you don't, and it's just how it goes.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you got to have tough days to learn, and you got to have tough days to you know, give credit to those fish and get just enough mad at them to go out the next day, for sure. Yeah, man. Well, we're doing super good for time here, Bob, and I'm enjoying the heck out of this conversation because we love the Missouri River system right down to your part of the world, and even including McConaughey. We got to get down. I got to get Jason. We got to just get in the pickup and head down there at some point in time. But yeah, man, I mean, as far as, you know, your guide business or anything that you want to promote, or if anybody has any questions, I'll give you a chance here right quick to just kind of rattle off whatever types of things that you want to promote or any content that might be out there where people could find you.
Well, basically, if you want to contact me, all you've got to do is I get away with my website because Facebook's so powerful. So the Facebook page is Props Professional Anglers. Otherwise, I have a separate Bob Props Facebook page too. Otherwise, you can look for my son's page, Mason Props Fishing. And other than that, I mean, phone number 605-222-1621. And as for promoting something, actually, I got to give a shout out to Josh Bible. He's been building me some custom design fishing rods, which I absolutely love. And his Facebook page is JB's Design. And he makes all kinds of great rods and does a tremendous job with it. And he's just starting off doing it. And so he keeps me supplied with rods.
Well, that's it, man. I mean, you know, in your part of the world, if there's anything that I forgot to ask or anything that just absolutely should be covered right here, right now, let me know. Otherwise, I think this is great. I just love hearing some stories and just kind of, you know, get every once in a while, give you a chance to kind of share your story and a little bit of your dad's story and kind of make sure that these young people are out there remembering, you know, where a lot of this information comes from and just to talk fishing with you. Just it's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been a pleasure, and yeah, let's do it again. Let's get you a Big Mac for some of those walleyes that they're on steroids down there. They're a walleye that fights different than anywhere I've ever been, and they grow tremendously big. I mean, these fish just are a different breed of fish down there.
All right, man, we'll do it again. We'll talk to you. Good luck on the water.
Take care. Good luck. Bye.